This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.
Everybody is to leave here immediately. This cafe is closed until further notice. Clear the room at once.
How can he close me up? On what ground?
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
You're winning, sir.
Oh, thank you very much. Everybody out at once.
Round up the usual suspects.
2-1-1-0.
I know some people want me to bypass Congress and change the laws on my own.
It is the agenda for the 21st century you're living in today. For a brave new world where everything that you cherished and held true will no longer exist.
The original Constitution, I think it is an imperfect document, and I think it is a document that reflects some deep flaws.
And that would authorize him to use the military to arrest people in the United States who, in the president's opinion, are enemies of the country.
He'll find that they've also asked for the right to imprison farmers who wouldn't keep books as prescribed by the federal government. The Secretary of Agriculture asked for the right to seize farms through condemnation and resell them to other individuals. And contained in that same program was a provision that would have allowed the federal government to remove 2 million farmers from the soil.
New government Republicans and Democrats were busy shredding the last vestiges of the Constitution. They're talking about inserting the army into domestic law enforcement. The homeland is part of the battlefield. And people can be held without trial, whether an American citizen or not.
I have been often to, the mothership in New York City. But it's good to have an outpost of the council right here down the street from the State Department. We get a lot of advice from the council, so this will mean I won't have this far to go to be told what we should be doing and how we should think about the future.
Take off the tinfoil hat.
And put on the Kevlar.
It's time for battle with Paul Preston and the Agenda 21 Show.
Well, hello and welcome to Agenda 21 Radio. This is the radio show that is stopping totalitarianism. One Burns, Oregon at a time. Yes, one community at a time, one person at a time. This is the radio show that helps you to stop the totalitarian. So welcome to the show. Boy, there's a lot going on. This is a special edition of Agenda 21 Radio because with us, that you're going to be hearing her shortly, is Victoria Sharp. Now, you may have heard about Victoria Sharp that the night of the morning of, literally, following the killing by the FBI and the Oregon State Police of Robert Lavoie Finnegan. This is the killing that took place after he was and others were associated with the Bundy, I guess you would say, occupation group in Oregon, were basically ambushed by the Oregon State Police. And as you're going to find out from her story, it's a firsthand account. And, you know, the interesting thing is that since this killing of Finnegan has been shown repeatedly now on videotapes and so on, the spin by the FBI, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, has been enormous. It's, a very, very going to end up, I think, in the long term, to be quite the black eye on the FBI and how this government is handling its people. Because Victoria, when she first did her interview, I listened to it. In fact, a good friend of mine, Jim White, was the one who facilitated posting it up. He and I talked at a great extent about Victoria. Scott Bennett enters the picture, and he lets me know that he's going to be interviewing and having her on his show called Truth Unite, and invited me to be one of the panelists of participants on the show to ask her questions, which I did. I had an opportunity to ask her questions and hear her story again. Now, hear her story after she was through the one-sided shooting that took place by the Oregon State Police and the FBI. There was no gunfight. In fact, what there was a one-sided killing. an assassination attempt on all the others that were in the cars. Yeah, it was going to be a one-sided killing. You see, it was not a shootout. It was a shooting. And the one-sided came strictly from the government guns. At no time do we have any witnesses that indicate that any player with the Bundy group that day touched a gun, unholstered a gun, displayed a gun, or made even a threat towards a gun. Now, I know that the FBI has been doing, and it completely debunks Mark McConnell, who happened to have been a driver, the driver in the green Jeep, the driver who basically said that he saw everything that took place and said that he had heard and he saw LaVoie charge the police and they shot him. Hello, the guy's a liar. In fact, we think he works for the government. Yeah, this is what people are telling Agenda 21 Radio, that they have concerns about him being actually a government stool. And it looks like that with what he is saying, he's got a very sordid history, but how can a person who is a mile down the road see the action? He loses all credibility from the get-go. His YouTube that he put out, I mean, the whole thing is a sham on his part. So there's also a bunch of other, as we've been seeing, media, big media and even alternative media sites that have been popping up, literally popping up, have no history to them, that have been carrying his story. His story that it really asserts that he deserved what he got and that he was charging the police, which is bunk, which is pure bunk. And you're going to hear that here with Victoria's presentation. So settle down and here we go. You're about to hear from Victoria Sharp, who on January 26th was traveling northbound with LaVoie Finicum, Ryan Payne, Ryan Bundy, and Samantha Cox. Now, both Ryans, LaVoie, and Samantha Cox were involved with, well, I guess you would say the occupation of the Malheur Wildlife Refuge outside of Burns, Oregon. Very contentious situation going on. They were traveling to a community meeting. They were actually invited along with Ammon Bundy and Buddha, his bodyguard, and another person by the name of Mark McConnell. They were driving in a separate vehicle, a green Jeep CJ. They were going up Highway 395 towards John Day when they were pulled over. Several people were arrested that night, except for Victoria Sharp. Victoria Sharp was not arrested. She had come along as a sort of, I guess you would say, a hitchhiker of sorts to go up to the meeting in John Day and become part of the choir. And they were going to be singing for the invited guest that night, who happened to be the Bundy group. Now, they were going to be talking about the Constitution, which is an important concept to remember in this whole discussion about what's going on in Burns, Oregon. So here we go with the testimony of a very, very courageous 18-year-old girl by the name of Victoria Sharp.
Thank you so much. I think a lot of things need to be investigated and explored over this whole thing that happened. I really hope that the people in the United States demand that they're able to see the evidence and that they have a fair chance to see what really happened that day. And I would like to talk to them and tell them what I've seen, what I saw when I was there, and what I heard, and what I know about the whole situation. I also wonder why the FBI cleared the scene within 24 hours and took away all the evidence. And I would like people to see the truck that we were in, see how many bullet holes and everything that was done to that truck while we were in it. And not just for me, but for the family of LaVoie. How much does death go for nothing, for freedom? And people need to stand up and take up the torch where he left for his family. So it was a truck with something on the back, like a cover on the back of the truck. It was white, and I believe it was the Voyage truck. So we started out about 3:30, and the boy was driving the vehicle, and Ryan Payne was in the right passenger seat, and Ryan Bundy was in the left back seat next to me. I was in the middle, and Shauna Cox was on my right in the back. And I was actually, the reason I was in the vehicle with them was because my mom and I, well, all of my seven siblings and I were going to sing this meeting that we were going to have with a bunch of ranchers and a sheriff in Dundee. Well, I had been outside and doing some stuff, so I hadn't gotten ready with them because I was running kind of late, and they were leaving at 3 o'clock in my mom's van. And so I asked Ryan Payne if it would be okay if I went with them, and he said sure. So we were going to go and meet with my mom, who was already who had left at around 3 o'clock. So we started out about 3:30, and we were driving, and everybody was relaxed and in a good mood. And I remember, Ryan Payne put the GPS on to get to John Day, to the place where we were going. And I remember he said something about his phone GPS working way better than his vehicle GPS. And I remember Ryan Bundy asked me how my trip from Montana, because I came down from Montana Monday evening to meet with my family that was already in Oregon.
Yeah.
So he asked me how my trip went, and I said it went pretty good, except for I hit a deer. I told him about that, and I remember Shauna Cox saying something about there being two people with the name Ryan in the same track, and then I remember the boy talking about his daughters, and I remember him saying that they were very beautiful. And it was mostly small talk. Oh, I remember Ryan Bundy said something about a trailer that Ryan Payne had seen for sale, and we're going to check it out for someone who might be coming. And so I was really, really tired because I had driven a lot, almost 15 hours between Sunday and Monday. And so I actually... I fell asleep on Ryan Bundy's shoulder.
Mm.
So then I woke up kind of suddenly because Ryan moved to look behind us. And when I woke up, I heard them saying in the car that someone was pulling over Ammon. And the vehicle behind us was a Jeep, and Mark was in the vehicle. Mark was driving. Mark McConnell, I believe that's his name. And Bundy and Buddha. And I remember him saying that I was pulling over the vehicle that Ammon was in. And we could see a bunch of vehicles behind us, a lot of them. They were big vehicles in black, and there were a lot of lights. And the boy said that he didn't think it would be safe to pull over. He didn't think it was a good idea. And he said, I'm not going to pull over. And he slowed his vehicle down when we pulled up out behind us. When a vehicle with lights and sirens pulled behind us, he slowed down, but he didn't stop for a while, and then he stopped in the middle of the road. And he rolled down his window, and we could hear the men behind us. They were shouting, and they were telling him to turn off his vehicle, and to put his hands out the window.
Okay.
I don't remember any profanity. I just remember them yelling to shut off the vehicle and put his hands out the window. And he immediately put his hands out the window.
Yeah.
He didn't turn the vehicle off, though, and he said, he shouted it back to them. He said, I'm not going to turn off the vehicle. We're going to see the sheriff, and you need to leave us alone. And he put his head out the window, and he had his hands out the window still, and he said that they could either put a bullet through his head, that they had a clear shot, or that they need to leave us alone and let us go talk to the sheriff. And they kept shouting at him, and there was lasers all over us, these red lasers, and so I knew that they were aiming guns at us, and I was scared they would shoot us. And so I shouted from the back, from my seat, I said, please don't shoot us. And Ryan Payne, who was in the right front seat, he said, we have women in the vehicle. And so they said, well, have the women get out of the vehicle. Well, they had a lot of guns on us.
Yep.
We were like, well, how do they want us to get out?
Yeah.
So Ryan said, well, I'll see how they want you guys to get out. So he put both of his hands out the window. This is Ryan Payne. put his hands out the window and his head, and he said, the women are going to get out of the vehicle. Well, then all of a sudden we hear the shot, and he ducks back in the vehicle. And I was like, and he goes, they just shot at me. And I was like, I'm not getting out. Because he didn't do anything, you know, aggressive. He had his hands up the vehicle, and he just got shot at. And so I said, I'm not getting out. Don't make me get out. So we were standing there, and Shauna Cox told me to get down. And I was kind of halfway down a little bit. So then Brian Payne kept talking to them. And during this time, Shauna Cox had a camera, and she was videotaping. And Merv Bunny was videotaping with his phone. And before they started videotaping, I remember Brian had tried to make a phone call. I think he was trying to call Sheriff Palmer, but I don't know for sure.
Yes.
But we didn't have any cell service, and so he couldn't make the phone call. Mm-hmm. And so then after they shot at Ryan and he got back in the vehicle, he started talking to them from inside the vehicle, and then he told us that he was going to get out. So he told them that he was getting out of the vehicle, and so they gave him direction. And I remember they told him to put his hands on the back of his hat and to walk backwards, and then I think they arrested him. Mm-hmm. But I just remember that soon after that, Lloyd was still talking to the men behind us, and he told them to stand down, that we were going to see the sheriff. And I remember him telling us that we had 50 miles left to go and that they'd be safe. I suppose he meant once we got to the other county, that we'd be safe. And I knew he was trying to get me to my mom, get me to safety and everybody else to safety.
Mm-hmm.
And, so he told us after a minute or two, he said, guys, I'm going to drive. So Shauna and Brian and I got down all the way on the floor, and he started driving. And it didn't feel too fast because I was down on the floor, and didn't feel like it was for very long. I think about 3/4 of a mile to a mile. And I remember during that time I thought they would shoot right away. Because I remember somebody running saying that they might shoot the tires out of the vehicle if you started driving. So that's when we got down. Just in case we didn't want to get hit if you started firing.
Yeah.
But I remember we kind of popped up and looked out the vehicle, and we could see that the police car was pursuing us. And Ryan said, they're beating on us. And then about right after that, I think the boy came upon the roadblock.
Yes.
And I don't know if he saw it ahead of time, because
I don't think he did, because I looked at that video, and you come around the corner, and it's impossible to see the roadblock when you're coming around the corner until you've turned, and he only had 2 or 3 seconds to veer to the left, and instead of crashing into the cars, he went into the snowbank.
Because I don't remember him saying anything about a roadblock. I just remember hitting a snow. He swerved, and we had a snowbank.
And there was an agent. Now, let me ask you. There was an agent that hopped out in front of the car, and it looked like he fired a gun through the windshield as he hopped out in front of the car. Did you see or hear any bullets coming through the windshield?
I did not see the agent, because at this point we were down. Because when we hit the snowbank, then we heard bullets, a lot of bullets, actually. It sounded from the back and the front when we were going in that snowbank, because we went for several feet. So while we were moving in the snowbank, there were a lot of bullets hitting the vehicle from the front and back. And as soon as we came to a stop in the snowbank, and I remember that I thought the vehicle might tip. Right then is when I thought, oh, we're going to die. We're going to die, because they were shooting at us, and the vehicle was going kind of wild, it felt like. And so I thought we would die.
Yeah.
And then as soon as the vehicle came to a stop, the boy opened his door, and I kind of popped up a little bit, because the bullet stopped coming when the vehicle stopped. So Ryan and I popped up, and we were watching the boy, and he got up, and he put his hands up and started walking toward the back of the vehicle, and he was shouting.
Did he say anything to you before he got out, like, stay here, or I'm going to go out? He just got out, he just moved?
Just got out. You know, and I don't know if he was hit. He could have been hit because there was a lot of bullets coming in the front.
Yeah.
He was standing right there. He wasn't ducked down.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing holes in the windshield where he was.
Yes.
So he may have been hit.
Yes.
I'm not sure.
Yes.
But I just know that as soon as it came to a stop, he opened the door and he got out with his hands up and he started walking and saying, "If you're going to shoot, then just shoot me." And I didn't think they would because he had his hands up and he wasn't being aggressive.
Yeah.
And I knew he was stumbling because there's a lot of snow there.
Yeah.
About 3 feet of snow or so.
Yeah.
And he was stumbling and losing his balance a little bit, but he had his hands up the whole time. And then the next thing we knew, they shot him, like 3 consecutive shots, right at the same time hit him. And I ducked down immediately. Ryan and I both ducked. And so then we heard 3 more shots, but they didn't hit our vehicle. So we were like, oh, they just shot him when he was down already.
So you heard 3 shots, pop, pop, pop. And
yes.
Momentarily later, you heard 3 more, pop, pop, pop.
Yes, we saw him go down right as the first 3 shots hit him. And then we got down when those shots went off, and then we heard 3 more shots.
Were the shots from the tree line, or?
They came from the left.
The left
side is, well, when they started firing at our vehicle, most of the shots were coming from the left of the vehicle, so from the tree line.
Got it.
So I believe, and I know that the first 3 came from the tree line.
Got it.
I didn't see the second 3.
Yeah.
But I heard them.
They did you see the men in the tree line? Did you see them in their positions?
I could see them once I got out of the vehicle.
Yeah.
Okay. I did.
Okay.
So after he got shot the second 3 times and I was down, I was horrified. I was like, oh my God. And I wasn't sure if he was dead or if he was bleeding out. But I said, I'm an EMT. I started shouting, that I'm an EMT. Please let me help him. So I started saying that, then the vehicle started getting riddled with bullets.
So they started shooting at your vehicle when you shouted out that you were an emergency medical technician. So you're an emergency medical technician. You've called, and they start shooting at your vehicle.
At the vehicle, yes. And they were shooting a lot. There was a lot of bullets flying. And you just hunkered down in there, and Ryan got hit. He was... So he was on my left, but he had turned, so he was down in the floor, but he was kind of leaning off the seat. He got hit in the right shoulder, and he said, oh, I got hit. And I was asking if he was okay, and the bullets just kept coming. And we started screaming, please stop, Shauna and I did. And Ryan was still recording at the time, so was Shauna, but they just had, their cameras down. You could hear everything, though.
Yes.
But screaming, please stop, and just kept shooting.
Yes.
It seemed from like all directions.
Yes.
But mostly on the left side, there was a lot of bullets coming on that left side.
Okay.
And so we just kept screaming and trying to stay down because we would see if like a laser hit our knee and then we'd move and so we wouldn't get shot. And it was really horrifying. And they didn't give us the option to get out of the vehicle because we were trying to find out what they wanted. And we wondered, did they want us to get out? Did they want us to, what do they want? And they won't give us any options. They were just shooting. And then the tear gas.
Yeah, the flashbang, the tear gas.
It kind of looked like a bluish, whitish smoke.
Yeah.
And then it hit our noses, and it was gas, and we were choking, and it burned, and we were trying to breathe. It was really hard to breathe. And we wanted to get out of the vehicle because it was really bad, but we couldn't because they kept shooting. And if we would have opened the vehicle, we would have been shot.
Yeah.
And so we just stayed where we were, and we were screaming, please, please stop. And remember, when we were screaming, there was a little stop in it. In the bullets, and someone said, oh, there's women in there. But they kept shooting, and they didn't stop. They didn't see if we wanted to get out. They didn't give us any options to do it. Nothing. They just kept shooting, and we gassed us like 4 more times. So I think altogether we were gassed 5 times. It would go away a little bit, and then it would come again, the big wave of the gas. And
so the police that were on your right, the police that were on your right hand side, acknowledged that there were women in the car. They knew,
yep.
And they voiced it, and they said it, yep. Loudly.
Yes, they were. They sounded to the right and back of us.
Okay.
I could hear them saying, "Oh, there's women in the car," or it was a truck, and they said, "There's women in there," and then they continued to shoot. And it seemed like 5 to 10 minutes there that we were in the vehicle, and we were trying to find something white to see if any of us has a white garment that we could maybe find something to put it out the window or throw it out the window, because the window was busted out from bullets on the left side.
Yes.
And we couldn't think of anything white that we had. And so we just stayed there. We were just screaming for them to please stop. Please stop.
Yeah.
And then finally, when there was a little, I was like, well, they want surrender? I don't know. So I started screaming, we surrender. And after a minute or so, they, someone shouted to open the left vehicle with their arms, the left door with their hands up. And so I did that. I kind of crawled over Ryan with my hands up, and I opened the left door, and
yep.
I had my hands up, and they said to have Ryan get out first and stay right there with my hands up. So I did, and Ryan got out first, and they gave him directions how to get around. And
yep.
There was like 20 lasers on me as I was standing there. You could see men dressed in black, dressed in camo in the trees, pointing their guns at me. So then after Ryan got out, then they had to get out. And they had me walk that way and sidestep, and they had me turn around and walk backwards. And someone said stop, and then someone grabbed me by the hair, and they started screaming in my ear, who's in the vehicle? How many more people are in that vehicle? And I said that there was just me. And then they dragged me over, and they told me to lay on my stomach, and they laid me down, and they cuffed me behind my back. And they said, what's the lady's name who's in the vehicle? And I said, I couldn't remember. I knew that her name started with an S, but I had just met her, and I couldn't
yep.
remember her name. So I said, it started with an S, but I can't remember her name. And so, what did she introduce herself as? And I said, she didn't introduce herself with a name. I can't remember. And so they finally just let me sit up in a cuff, and they got Sean out of the vehicle. And then they started asking us if anyone else was in there. And we said no. And they said, if anybody else is in there, they're about to die.
Were they painful? Were they rude? Were they rough? Were they aggressive when they were physically manhandling you?
At the very beginning, when they first started, yes, they were very rough. Especially the first guy who handled me. I don't know who he was, but he grabbed me by the hair, and he pulled my hair, and he was screaming in my ear, and he was very rude. So, and then they started asking us if anyone else was in the vehicle, and told us that if there was anyone else in the vehicle, that they were about to die. And then they started shooting the vehicle again.
If there's anyone in the vehicle, they're about to die. They didn't take any shots. They didn't have any weapons. They had their hands out. They said they surrendered. There were women in the car. And yet the police said to you, if there's anyone else in there, they're about to die.
Yes, we were telling them there's else in there, and they said, well, there is, they're about to die. And so they started shooting at the vehicle.
They started shooting at the vehicle again.
Yes.
After you told them, after you had announced that a woman, Shauna, was in the car, that there was no danger.
This was after Shauna was out. Shauna got out, and we were asking her, they were asking Shauna and me if there was anyone else in the vehicle.
Yes.
And we said no, and then they said there was, that they were about to die, and that's when they started shooting
again. And then they started shooting again to kill anyone in the vehicle.
Yes, anyone who had not gotten out. And there wasn't anyone in there, unfortunately, but they started shooting again.
So they just wanted to kill anything that might have been in there, that may have been, you know, no interest in anything that they had or said, just wanted to kill anything in there.
So then we were sitting on the road,
yeah.
And I was really, really cold. My teeth were chattering. I do remember one man was kind. He had state police written on his back, and I remember I was crying. I could see LaVoy laying there in the snow, his hands still up, and I was saying, I can't believe they shot him. I can't believe they killed him. And he came over and he tapped me on his shoulder, and he said, it's going to be okay. You're going to be okay. And
how many other kinds of uniforms do you remember? There was a state police, you said. What other kinds can you remember?
So I remember two kinds of vehicles. Two kinds of uniforms. There were maybe three, because there were men with FBI on their back, and they had helmets on, and there were some men in black with FBI on their back, and there were also some men with vests on that had state police on their back. So those were three. Most of the guys had FBI on their back. There were just maybe three or four that had state police on their back.
The rude one that was rough and harsh with you, was he state police or FBI, or do you know?
He was FBI. He was an FBI man. Because I remember seeing him afterwards, because he was still there. He was the one who cuffed me. So he was standing there, and I think I remember him having a red beard.
Red beard. Did they say their names at all? Any titles? I'm officer, I'm in charge?
No, they just had FBI on their back, and then some of them had, a couple of them. The ones that were further back that started coming up, not from the trees, but from the vehicles, some of them had state police on their back.
Did any of them look to you strange, crazy, wild, weird, anything, any vibes, any spiritual feelings you had when these men were coming around you after all this?
You know, they kind of looked amused to me. They seemed, because I could see some of them around LaVoy's dead body, and they seemed amused, and they were laughing, and they were talking together, and a couple of them didn't, some of the guys that, especially the state police, didn't seem as, think it was so funny. They seemed a little bit more caring than the FBI guys did, but I remember that the FBI guys, it seemed like they thought the whole thing was really funny.
You went back, and there was a thought that when you initially were stopped, before Mr. LaVoy started accelerating again to get out of there, that when the announcement was made for a woman in the car, there was laughter before they started shooting at the car the first time. Do you remember the first time when you were on the road, any laughter, any heckling, anything like that?
You know, I couldn't hear them really well, so I can't say that I remember hearing laughter. I do remember that when Ryan told him that we were going to get out, that they shot at him.
Yes.
But I don't remember laughter the first time.
When
the car, the car that was in front of you when Ryan went around the corner, what color was that car?
The car that was at the roadblock?
Yes.
I couldn't see the roadblock. I was kind of further down. I felt him swerve and hit the snow, but I could see the roadblock. I was too far down too.
So Mr. LaVoy, when he was shot, did you hear any laughter or boasting or profanity or anything that was rude about the men after they shot Mr. LaVoy? That they were celebrating his death?
It was not directly after, because directly after I started shouting that I was an EMT to please let me out, let me help him. And directly as I started saying that, then they started firing on our vehicle. So I didn't hear them laughing and talking about it until after we had gotten out of the vehicle and we were sitting cuffed on the ground. And then I saw them around him laughing, and I thought it was so disrespectful and so rude and so wrong.
What were they laughing about, do you think? About the shot, that one of them was proud of their ability to shoot him in the head, or proud that they had killed a militiaman, or proud that they had served Obama or some sort of political agenda? What do you think they were laughing and celebrating?
I couldn't tell you. They seemed proud of the fact that they had shot him, but I can't say that I know exactly what they were laughing about. I could hear them talking, but I don't know exactly what they were saying.
Okay.
Yeah, Victoria, the big question to me is, you shouted out that you're an EMT. Did you see them render at any time medical assistance or even check for a pulse or anything, any point in time, was LaVoy laid there on the snow?
No. As soon as they shot him, then they started to shoot at our vehicle. So there was no time between then, between them shooting them, him, and then us. And then after we exited the vehicle, no one, they were just simply standing around him, laughing. No one checked to see if he was still alive. No one checked to see if he needed medical attention. Nothing of that nature. And even with Ryan, when we were sitting on the pavement, I remember that he had said he got shot. And so I asked him how his shoulder was. And he said, well, it hurts, but I don't see a whole lot of blood. So, and then he said, well, let me look. So he cut his shirt, and he said, oh, there's a bullet in his arm. But right then, I said, I promise I'll cooperate if you let me help him, because no one seemed to be helping him. And they said, no, I'm sure we have plenty enough medical people here that can deal with this. You're fine. You just stay right there. But no one tended to him until an ambulance got there, and that was a while later.
Did they find a gun on him?
I'm not sure. I can't remember, because I was still in the vehicle when Ryan exited the vehicle. If they did, it was never touched. It was still holstered. Because I can't remember if he had a gun or not. So, but I do know that after they put him in the ambulance, they kept him on scene for at least 2 hours, I believe. At least 2 hours. So they did not take him to the hospital immediately after he was shot.
Did you see any of the men with a gun on their person or in their holsters or anything when we were in the car when we got out?
I know that the boy had a gun holstered, and I know that Ryan Payne did have a gun. It was also holstered. All of them were holstered. I can't remember if Ryan had a gun or not. I can't remember.
Okay.
And then Shauna didn't have a gun.
And then when you were on the cement, you were handcuffed. What happened at that point when they were ready to, anything else really jump at you? We've had the guys laughing and cackling and celebrating their kill, and they've got you in handcuffs. They've riddled the car with bullets. Was there any cleanup or anything that struck you odd that they were trying to hide or clean up on the scene or with the car or whispering things or anything jump out?
You know, they moved us, so we didn't get to see a whole lot of what they did afterward. They kept us there for about 2 hours, but they took us down to the first scene where we stopped originally and they fired the first shot.
Yeah.
So they kept us there for an hour or so. So during that time, I'm not sure what they did to the scene because we couldn't see.
Yeah. Did you see any blood or anything like that from LaVoy or any of the stuff that should still be there if they didn't sanitize it?
I didn't, because I was trying to follow orders. I remember them telling me follow the orders from the next voice, yep. Which was kind of hard because there was about three or four guys yelling at me at the same time, and I was like, which one?
Yeah.
So, but I was trying to just not get shot. So I wasn't really, except for the fact that I saw him face up with his hands still up.
Yeah.
I couldn't see if there was blood or, they shot a lot of rounds at that vehicle.
Victoria, I have one more question about LaVoy's gun. We've seen pictures of LaVoy with a large holster on his right-hand side. Is that the gun that you're talking about? It was holstered on his right-hand side?
Yes, it was a gun holstered on his right-hand side.
The big with the beige colored holster.
Yes.
Okay. So that probably leads to him being shot in the left side, as you remarked, Paul, because yep. His holster was not on his left; it was on his right, and we see him reaching over to his left as he shot the first time,
right.
And then he goes down.
Well, it also leads to. Go ahead, Victoria. Go ahead.
And with him reaching over to his left side, I looked at that video. I watched it a lot of times really closely. And I was like, he's not reaching, because I was there. I watched the whole thing. And I remember it firsthand. And I don't think he was reaching. I feel like he was losing his balance.
Right.
And he's kind of moving around. His hands are no longer up this high, but his hands are still, like, right here.
Yeah.
I don't think he was reaching for anything on his left side. I think he was trying to keep his balance.
So you go down to the first location once more. You're held there. Were any of the other men, you know, that you were with, Ammon Bundy or the others, were they saying anything that struck out to you, that they were worried or they were upset or anything, or were they just silent and just continuing forward?
Once we were in the vehicle down at the other site, they put the other four guys in the vehicle with us. And, I mean, this is a really embarrassing fact that I'm about to tell you, but I might as well just say it. We all had to use the bathroom, but I had been waiting actually since I was in a hurry when I got in at 3:30, and I had been waiting since then.
Yeah.
I had to go. And we told the guys that were outside of the vehicle, which was Deputy Needham, I think was his name, Needham, and another police or sheriff deputy that was standing outside of the vehicle. We told them that I needed to use the bathroom really bad. Yeah. Could they let me go? And they said no. They said that I had to wait. And I waited for like another 30 minutes, and I asked them again. They said no. So finally I was like, I just got to relieve myself in here.
Yeah.
And so my cup, I used to have a game with my nine siblings. We used to have this game where we tie each other up and try to get out, and we would time each other to see how long it would take to get out. Mm-hmm. So I kind of knew how to slip out of cups, and I was using they had used zip-tight cups on me.
Yeah.
So I was able to slip out of the, I told Shauna, I was like, I think I can get out of these. She was sitting next to me, and she's like, well, just slip out of them and pull your jeans down, relieve yourself, and put them back on.
Yeah.
That's what I did.
Wow, so you're a brave girl.
I slipped out. She said, if they see you, they're just going to put them on a lot tighter. I said, yeah, I know. But I got to use the bathroom really bad.
Yeah.
So I slipped out of the cuff, and I pulled my jeans down, and I relieved myself in the corner.
Yeah.
And then I was about to pull my jeans back up, and someone saw that I had my cuffs off. And they said, hey, why do you have your cuffs off? And I said, I told you I had to use the bathroom.
Yeah.
I said, I'll put them back on in just a second. Let me pull my jeans up. And so they tried to open they opened the door, and they were about to come in. And I said, I'm not dressed. Give me a second.
Yeah.
So I pulled my jeans back up, and then I put my cuffs back on, and they said to come out there, and they tightened them up. And then I couldn't get out of them.
Yeah.
But then, so we sat there for a while, and I remember when they first got in the vehicle, when the men first got in the vehicle, they asked what had happened. They said they couldn't really hear or see much at all. They said they had heard some gunshots, but they couldn't really tell what had happened, and we told them the boy was killed.
Yeah.
And that Ryan Bundy had a bullet in his shoulder. And I remember Ammon Bundy was really, really, it really made him really upset. As far as sad, he put his head down. Buddha asked us to give Ammon a couple minutes of silence. And so we were all quiet for a little while and let him grieve.
Yeah.
And then we talked a little bit about the events and what had happened, and they told us what had happened with them. And it was a really sad time.
Yeah, yeah. And then you continued on to, I want to get to what they said to you in the interrogation room, what they said to you when they took you into the police office. Did they try and intimidate you, scare you, threaten you, or apologize profusely, this should never have happened, or treat you like a little girl, or try and manipulate you and get any information out of you? What sort of things can you remember?
You know, they didn't ask a whole lot of questions. When I got to the sheriff's office, they brought me. I was really distraught at this time. I didn't want to be separated from everyone. I was myself, and I was scared. And I remember that Ryan Payne, when we were in the vehicle, he told me, he said, if they take you into custody, he said, you don't have to say anything. He said, you can ask for a lawyer. So I remember when I went in there, there was a man that introduced, I don't think he gave me his name, he just said he was from the FBI, and there was a woman there, and she didn't say where she was from, and they said that they asked me my name and my age and just some personal questions about myself and my car and where it was. And then they said they wanted me to tell them about what had happened at this incident, they wanted me to tell them the story. And I said I didn't want to talk about it, that I wanted to speak to a lawyer. They said, they kind of looked at each other, and then they said, well, actually, you're not under arrest. You're free to go. So we just wanted to talk to you about this, though. We just wanted to get your side of the story. I didn't want to talk to them about it. I knew that it was probably not a good idea, so I told them I just wanted to call my mom and go with her. And so they said they would try to find a phone that I could call my mom off of, and then I went and got my coat, and then I found that my phone was in a bag next to my coat. So I tried to call my mom, but I couldn't. And because she was not picking up her phone, it was going to voicemail. And then eventually she called me back from another number. But I was waiting there for probably 20, 25 minutes, and they wanted to just drop me off at McDonald's. And they said, well, is it my mom said that she didn't want to come to the sheriff's office to come and get me, that they were trying to figure out a way to come get me or have someone come and get me that was safe. She said there was roadblocks up and they couldn't get to me. And they were like,
you're 17 or you're 18?
You're 18. I'm 18, but I have my car with me. So
did anyone demonstrate a concern and a care for a young, pretty young lady and this time of day and wanting to make sure that you are safe and not in any way jeopardized in any situation for what they were going to shake you and drop you off somewhere next?
They said, I think they wanted to see my mom. And so they were saying, well, we're not dropping. They said, we'll drop you off at McDonald's. And then they said, when I said, well, my mom, well, you can do that. And then my mom will come pick me up. I'll meet with her. And they said, well, then they kind of looked at each other. And then they said, well, you know what? We're not going to do that unless we know that someone is coming to pick you up. And then they kind of suddenly changed their mind after about 10 minutes. And they said, we're going to drop you off at McDonald's and they can come get you. They said, if anybody hasn't picked you up within an hour to an hour and a half, they gave me a number and they said, call this number and we'll come get you. And they said, and if you want to talk, then we'll talk, then you can talk to us and tell us what happened. And I said, okay. So then they said they were taking me to McDonald's, but then they ended up stopping at Safeway and dropping me off at Safeway instead. And They did give me, I told them that my nose and my throat were burning from the tear gas.
Yes.
They gave me a bottle of water, and then they dropped me off and they left.
Yes.
And I was crying at this point. I was, yeah. I was just.
It all came to you. It all came like a deluge. Yeah. It all arrives. You showed enormous strength to have gone through a combat situation, which many men crumble into fetus positions. Men. You as a young woman have behaved profoundly strong and with courage. I'm deeply impressed.
Thank you. But it did hit me.
Yeah.
That dropped me off. And I was like, whoa, it was a lot. And I started crying and I walked into the grocery store. And one of the ladies, the cashiers, saw me and she said, are you okay? And I said, I'm fine. I just need to use the bathroom. Can you point me that way? And so she did. And then I came back outside, and I was trying to make a phone call, but no one was answering. I don't know if it was they had bad service or they were trying to figure something out. They didn't want to be traced or what, but I couldn't get a hold of anyone, and I was standing there all alone, and I was just crying. Yeah. And then one of the other cashiers came out, and she asked me if she could do anything for me. And I told her I was just trying to get a hold of someone to pick me up. And she asked if I'd like to sit in the back of the store. So I went. I did. And so I went back to the back of the grocery store. And I was sitting there. And I called someone. My phone was blowing up with people from Montana. Some of my friends. They were trying to find out if I was safe, if I had been shot, what had happened. And so it was kind of trying to send them all a brief message that I was fine. I was just trying to get a hold of someone, pick me up. And so I got on the phone with someone who knew that I was waiting, someone who I used to live with in Montana, and they started talking to me, and I was telling them the story. And one of the ladies from the grocery store overheard me telling, and she came in, and she said she was so sorry about everything. And then while I was talking to her, then a group of four people came in, and they had my mom on the phone, and they said they were here to pick me up and take me to safety. And I talked to my mom, and they took me, and they gave me water and food, and they got me shower, and they took me from there to safety.
Yeah.
The situation there, are you hearing any things about the growing momentum and the anger about what they did in putting that man to death? Have you heard anything that you want to share with us?
You know, I've heard that the people of Burns are upset about it, and I'm really glad. I really hope that the people of this nation hold the government accountable for what they did, and that they don't just let it go, and it doesn't become the new normal. I remember, this might sound really funny, but I'm a Hunger Games fan. I love that book series and that movie series. And I remember when I was going to go out to Oregon, I was pretty much just going out there to sing with my family, but I remember people telling me, "Oh, you shouldn't go." And they said, "What if the FBI like storms that place and kills everyone?" I said, "You know, I'm not." I said, "I just want to go there," and I said, "I want to be a voice." I said, and somebody was like, "What do you mean?" I said, "I want to be a Mockingjay," and I feel like this situation. I remember also when I was in the vehicle. The van that they were taking all of us to, how all of us detained, and all of us were in there. Ryan Payne, after they cuffed me tighter, I was sitting in the front seat, and I was sitting in front of Ryan Payne, and I looked back at him, and he said, I'm so sorry that I ever let you come, so that you shouldn't have been through this. And I said, no, I'm not. Yes. I said, because now I'm a voice.
Yes.
I said, now I have a story to tell. And I said, and now the death of this man isn't going to be nothing.
Yes.
Because I can tell what happened. And now I can be that Mockingjay. I can tell people, you know, that they need to stand up for what's right and not let this go for nothing. Because he shouldn't. He should not have died. They should not have killed him that way.
Yes.
And people need to do something about it.
Yes.
You know, I want to get my story out. And I want justice done for this man. And, something that was on my heart today, I was talking with someone about the men that are still in that refuge, four men that are still there. You know, they can leave and save their lives, or they can die, stay there and die. Or if a bunch of people go, and it doesn't have to be militant, it doesn't have to be crazy, but if there are a ton of people that go to that refuge, the FBI can't go in and kill a bunch of women. I mean, they can. They've proven that they will, but if a lot of people, like I'm talking about hundreds or thousands of people go there, those men will be protected. And I really wish that we could make a call for people to go there, to the refuge, and stand by those men and say, don't you dare kill those men. They haven't done anything wrong. I really wish we could make a call for that to happen, to keep those four men alive. Those men that are brave enough, who know that if they stay there, they're going to lose their lives. And even people who aren't Christians, but people who love liberty, they can stand with them too, who has it in their soul that you know, the law that God has written on our heart, that love liberty, anyone who has that in them, just stand by these men. Don't let them be killed.
Victoria, a great job, and our thoughts and prayers are with you and the family of Lavoie, and your family as well. There's going to be a lot of strength that you can derive from everybody. And you're welcome on my show anytime. We'll be in touch with various people and so on. We know a lot of people, actually, mutually, between yourself and myself and other people. With Clive and Bundy was a guest out at the Liberty Tour two times. I know Buddha very well, and he knows me, because I called him Bubba one time. Don't ever do that to Buddha. Don't ever call it. You know what I mean. So we will be in touch, and Godspeed, and we're going to do everything we possibly can to protect you and take care of you.
We're sending out an SOS to the last vestiges of freedom, democracy, and the American way of life. Paul Preston with Agenda 21.
Stay tuned for more of Paul Preston's Agenda 21 Radio.
This is AENN, American Exceptionalism News Network.